et ça donne bon Dieu.
Hello, queer English speaking people. I am Vinicius Castro and I'm passing by to ask you a very important favor. We on Bacana Cast are producing a series of episodes for the LGBTQ Pride Month that's coming on June. For that, we need your help with uplifting stories about everything queer. Your first time, how you came to realize you are gay, anything you are proud of. If you have the time, we will be putting the contact on the description of this episode. We will be respecting your anonymity of your stories. Change the voice if you choose to send the audio on Telegram or WhatsApp, or change the name if you choose to send us an email. That's all. Let's enjoy the episode. Thank you. Hi, if you are an English speaker, please proceed with caution. This is my first interview in English. My English is not very fluent as I wish, so please be patient. Se você não é uma pessoa que fala inglês, ou se você fala inglês tanto quanto eu, tenha paciência, porque em breve vai ser uma versão totalmente dublada, mas ela vai demorar um pouquinho. So, let's play it. Hello, Bacaners! My name is Vinicius Castro, and today on Bacana Convida, we have a game developer among us. Today, we'll be chatting with Lemon, the developer of the exciting game called Patch Quest, a roguelike monster-riding action game. If you are listening, I really shouldn't have to tell you to subscribe, 5-star us if available, and follow us in the social media accounts. All that is in the link tree down below. Lemon, introduce yourself to our audience.
Hi, it's good to be here. So I'm making Patch Quest. It's largely a solo project, except that I'm working with two musicians to make the music. And of course, there's a lot of playtesters on the Discord server who are helping out with quality assurance and making sure the game is balanced and everything. But for the most part, it's a game that I'm making myself and that I've been working on for the last 5 or coming up to 6 years now.
I really want to congratulate you because this is a huge project. The sheer amount of details you are implementing along these 5-6 years is stunning. In the recent years, Lemon, I have been grown in interest to how to make things. Podcasts, yeah. Movies, games, and your channel has been a beacon because I've been following you a year now, I think.
Oh, wow.
And watching you develop the game, you picking some details and improving and all of that while making videos for YouTube, I think it's amazing.
Well, thank you. The videos have been a big benefit to the project because it's where pretty much all of the traffic and all the interest in the game has come from. You know, it's very difficult to stand out in today's indie game market because, you know, there's just so many games that are made all the time. And so having this YouTube channel has really helped helped out the project, and I'm glad that people also enjoy watching them.
I do think that your amount of viewership is very due to your ability to communicate yourself. You have a very soothing voice.
Thank you.
We talked a little before the starting of the recording, but I do think it's a little strange, I guess, to talk to you outside the videos. And the other thing I do think is responsible for your viewership is very fun, I guess, very beautiful to watch the Patch Quest develop. And I'm really, really, really anxious to play the patch quest when it launches 7th of May, a month from now.
Yeah, just a month from now, actually. From the time this is being recorded, it's just slightly over 4 weeks till it launches. I've still got a lot to do in that time, like finish making a trailer and setting up the Steam store and stuff, but everything should be on track.
You said that it's mostly you that is making the game, but you have two musicians.
Yeah.
In one of the videos, you said that, I think is how to not make an indie game. You said that you had to develop a lot of skills, UX, some kind of marketing. How has been this process for you?
Well, it's been very humbling to try and really create and finish a large project like this, because I mean, I used to make little hobbyist things in Game Maker, now called Game Maker Studio, when I was a teenager at high school and such. But there's a huge gap between making some little like platformer thing that has like two levels in it and making a completed game and getting that game out there and getting it uploaded to stores and getting trailers made, getting people talking about it, even just, you know, all of the things that go into making a menu system or making sure that it runs quickly on a lot of different PCs. There's so many different elements to it that I didn't really anticipate at first, which is partly why the project has taken a lot longer than I expected. But I think it's really just about being ambitious, but then also being persistent. So you set yourself a big goal, but then you have to do the sort of gradual hard work of building up each particular skill that you need as you get to it. At least that's what I've been trying to do.
How big is the part of being an indie developer in the making of this game?
Of course, you said you are only accompanied, but
two musicians. But in the industry, we talk a lot about the crunch of the big developers and the big publishers.
Yeah.
And being just yourself basically is a recipe for crunch. even though you have been developing it for 6 years now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, crunching is still, I think it's a reality for everyone to some degree, just because games take so many different disciplines to create and, you know, everyone has limited time. But there's a lot you can do to kind of minimize it. I mean, I've been crunching the past month, but that's only really because I've been trying to get it ready for Steam. And most of the time I try to have a more sustainable outlook of try and figure out what I can realistically get done in 1 month, and then, you know, try and do that and hopefully a little bit extra. And budget time into that to make a YouTube video that explains what I've done and what my next month's goal is going to be. And so I think that by dividing up your time like that into these sprints, then you can measure how well you're going, whether you're meeting targets, and it also provides motivation because, you know, like, well, in another 3 weeks I'm gonna finish up this segment and report on it to YouTube. So I think it helps with motivation and with breaking down tasks into more reasonable chunks that you can complete. And with the AAA industry, I think that they have a real tendency to bite off a lot more than they can chew because, you know, you have these teams of hundreds of people and you've got to put them to work somehow. So, you know, you look at what other games have and say, well, this game has, you know, a city, and in that city there's 100 different subquests that you can do. So you set aside teams of people who work on that. And I think that when you're coordinating such a large group of people on such an expansive project, it can be easy to mess up the time scheduling, you know, especially if your release date has been set, you know, a year in advance. It's very difficult to know. And so I think that's part of why big companies crunch a lot. And so I guess my advice would just be to try and keep it simple, break it down into monthly goals that you realistically think you can achieve, and then link that into some kind of marketing where you try and tell people, maybe through YouTube, maybe through some other platform, try to show people what you've done each month. That's been my recipe anyway.
We see the fiasco with this cyberpunk. So I think that one day or another, the industry is becoming less crunchy for the, I think, because the part of
developing of your game is seeing how it develops along the time. As I said, I've been following you for a year now, and you had some huge changes of the sub-mechanics, the amount of creatures you add, the amount of ecosystems you build. So, like I said, it is a paced kind of work instead of, oh my god, we have to launch it next month and we have nothing ready, so launch it anyway.
It has to work three times as hard as they normally would, right? Yeah.
You said that you built some games on your teenage years, but do you have a title we can play or there? How was your first game like?
No, I never really like finished games at that time. It was mainly just hobbyists trying to learn the basics, you know, like I'd copy Super Mario and make like a level or two and put a twist in it. The kind of stuff that I think a lot of, you know, maybe 16 or 18 year olds who want to get into game development try and do, like making Pong, making Breakout, these sorts of things. But Patch Quest is my first full title. That is completed and being put out there for people hopefully to buy and play and enjoy.
I think you are in a good path to accomplish that.
Thanks.
Which are your references? What do you like to play? What's your mind, your playlist?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, you know, because when I started Patch Quest, I was playing a lot of roguelikes, the more modern roguelikes, like, you know, Binding of Isaac or things like that. And since I started development, a lot of new ones have released, like Dead Cells and Enter the Gungeon and all of these things that have been influences on the game's design, trying to make a roguelike where you keep a little bit of your progress on each run instead of starting completely from scratch. That's kind of was the key motivation behind the game. But weirdly enough, the longer I've been working on this, the more I've been playing base building games or city building games. I think just because it's the furthest thing from Patch Quest, it's like the most opposite thing. I think it helps like revitalize me a little bit to do something that is just completely unrelated to what I'm working on. Although recently I have been playing Monster Hunter Rise, which is really good, in my opinion.
Monster Hunter is in my playlist. I didn't have the time to play it right now because indie games are kind of new for me. I played some indie games that became huge just after they became huge, like Cuphead, like Bind of Isaac was one of them. Minecraft some time ago was in the game, and yours became to me almost like a first true in-game
that
I will play, I think, because, as I said, those are now published games with a huge budget or unless seeing building it. In your how to not build an indie game video, in your wish list was cute monsters. Pokemon has been played in your design choices for the creatures.
Yes, Pokemon has been a big influence. Pokemon was one of the first games I ever played. I think I was given an original Game Boy back when I was maybe just 5 years old, and I had Pokemon Blue on it. And so that game has really influenced me a lot over the course of my life. Although it's also, I have maybe a love-hate relationship with Pokemon because I feel like the game has not really advanced in the same way that other genres have. You know, if you look at Legend of Zelda, for example, there is a massive difference between the original and Breath of the Wild. But if you look at Pokemon, the difference is less clear to see. But one thing I do think is really good and has always been good about it is the designs of the monsters. You know, they have these sort of animal-inspired designs. They have names that go with those designs that help it like click in your mind. Like, oh, that's what this creature is, you know?
I think you are doing a good job for that, not just with your creatures, but with the flora and fauna and all your habitats. Is much, much fun to see your creativity play a role in that.
Thank you.
I love the rationalization behind the countdown mechanics with the food instead of the just brute force like he is in Pokemon. Because I think it's a lore of the games that what happens to Pokemon after they are defeated.
Yeah.
And yours are just calm down, just chill, because they had a big candy or fruit lunch.
Exactly. Yeah, you shoot your nutritional sedative gloop at them and it sort of sprays all over them and makes them sleepy and full. And so they decide not to fight you anymore. That's kind of the idea. It gets a bit strange when you mount the monsters and then you make the monster like shoot fire at the other monster. The metaphor kind of breaks down a little bit, but still, I tried to keep it sort of non-violent as much as you can, because obviously they're cute monsters and you don't want to be beating the crap out of them.
You are an explorer, after all. You are not a trained
not
battle
a soldier.
Station, yes.
Yeah,
you are there to pick up the pests and collect them, after all, not
yeah.
to build some kind of zoo, to kind of the humane zoo. You started the path quest with the mentality to be a RPG, more in the sense of pace of it and the turns, I guess.
Yeah.
How was for you to ditch that first idea and develop Pet Quest with some kind of a leap in difference of that?
Sure. Yeah, so the game originally was a turn-based roguelike, sort of like the original roguelikes, like Rogue or Shiren the Wanderer, or, you know, games like that where you're on a grid and you move one space each turn, or you make one attack each turn and then all the monsters do their turn, and it goes like that with a very kind of quick turn-based pattern. But the game just wasn't quite coming together for me in that design, I think, because of the combination. I wanted to have this turn-based action gameplay, but I also wanted to try and avoid it being too violent and being too like, oh, you just, you know, punch monsters to death. But if you look at the games in that genre, they all revolve around this kind of like, I sidestep, I hit again, I get injured, so I sidestep, and then I heal, and then I hit. And you sort of like guide them down corridors to kind of funnel them so you can hit them more easily. And by taking that out, the game just sort of never really worked. It never really came together. And I've been working on it for a few years at that point, more than 3 years. And some of that time was just learning the basics of Unity and all of that. But after about 3 years, I just kind of started to realize that, you know, the game was very much a fleshed out prototype, but I wasn't having a lot of fun playing it. And I tried making changes to make it more fun, but it just wasn't happening. And so it was a very difficult decision to completely abandon that design of the game and start again, recycling some of the monsters and mechanics and things, or more the world than the mechanics, but changing the gameplay. So it was a big and sort of scary decision, but it was also a decision that I felt had to be done, because I just wasn't feeling the game in the way that it was at that time. You know, I had all these plans of, oh, I want to do this and that. But when I was playing it, I just wasn't feeling it. And my friends who I were forcing to playtest it, they weren't really feeling it either. And so it was the natural decision, but it was a difficult decision as well. But it paid off.
I think it did. You said a lot to follow the fun when developing games, and I think it's a good choice, because we can see in the videos that you are having fun in some kind of way, not just because the world is very colorful, the creatures are named funny, but following the fun is a good advice. It's a good advice for the newcomers. If you had to advise the newcomers in how to first learn some techniques to make games, where did you lead them? Because you already said that making a month wish list with the things you have to do and hoping to not crunch is a good advice, but where did you learn the some techniques you did?
So that idea of breaking things down into these sort of month-long sprints, that is an idea from software development in general, because I studied software development at university, although 95% of that was not really related to video games. It was more related to, you know, real jobs, as they say. but the idea, the philosophy is called Agile. It's like an acronym, but it also is just the word Agile, which means basically you don't know, as a developer, you don't really know what you're trying to build yet. So what you want to do is try and make the best guess of what you're trying to build, and then move towards that as quickly as possible. And then at the end of your sprint, which could be a week or could be a month, you then look at what you've made, compare it to what you thought you were making, and then decide, is this still the right path? Do I need to change direction? So that's called a pivot. So I'd advise people to look up agile development and sprints and pivots, because that's the kind of framework that I was building off of. But also, just more broadly, a lot of the game development skills that I picked up, I just had to learn by doing them, really. I just had to try it and see how far I got. There's a lot of online resources, especially for Unity, where you can like Google, you know, this particular problem that you're having, and you'll find 10 people who have solved it. So, you know, that can really help you speed along the process. But really, it is just about starting small, starting simple, taking things one step at a time, and learning as you go. And I think that's good advice for all kinds of software development, to be honest.
I really found interesting that you said that as a developer, you don't know what you're building as you build. You have to take a look and compare the two of them.
Yeah.
Because in general, I think podcasting has been kind of like that, where I really, really, really miss a mentor kind of system, because we joke a lot about, oh, when I become 18, I'm going to be independent. I don't have to answer to nobody. I don't want anybody telling me what to do. And now all I want is someone to tell me what to do. So I think your videos are especially good in that, because as we see you grow and build some mechanics and evolve some mechanics, we can kind of mirror that in possibly making a game, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that it is helping to inspire people, or even just that people are enjoying watching the devlog episodes. When I first started making them, let me think, about 2 years ago, I think I started making the devlog, I was still pretty bad at making YouTube videos. You know, my volume levels are all over the place, and my voice recording is, you know, not very, it's a bit like crackly, and it's not so good. And, you know, narration needs a lot of work as well, and I don't sound as natural as I'd want to, and all of these things. But I think that if you worry too much about making something perfect, then you'll never finish anything, because nothing you make is ever going to be perfect. You've just got to go with it. You've got to do your best and put it out there. And I think putting things out there is really essential in the modern world, where, you know, there's so many things competing for people's attention online, that if you are not regularly putting things out there, you're not going to be seen. So I think that's just the key. Like, don't be afraid to show that you don't know what you're doing. Don't be afraid to show that you're growing. And because if you show those things, you also show that you're improving, and it will help you improve as well. So I think it's really important to sort of just humble yourself and be like, look, even if I'm not super happy with the video that I've made or the state of the game as it is right now, I've still just got to get it out there and show as many people as I can.
What was the big hurdle to make Path Quest? What was the mechanic or the aspect of the game you had more trouble with?
Well, it was honestly just getting that simple concept, which ended up being this idea that you have this island full of wild monsters and you can mount and ride all of the monsters. And when you are riding them, you can use three skills that are special to that monster. So, you know, the turtle has like a shell, and the lizard can tunnel underground and things like that. Because originally the game was so messy, had all these different components to it and ideas to it, and I was reluctant to really prune out any of those ideas because I wanted my game to like be like this and be like that, and oh, it should do this too, and it should be like that game, only better. So the hardest thing for me was really just trying to figure out what is that one thing that I'm really trying to make that my game will be unique because it has this one hook that is easy to explain and easy to show to people. I think settling on that was probably the most difficult thing for me, other than just the difficulty that's inherent to creating a video game, because it's never easy, you know.
And the opposite quest, what was the easiest thing to do in the development of the Path Quest?
Yeah. I think that was really creating the monsters themselves, because that was just a lot of fun and it's quite a easy task to break up, you know, like, oh, I'll add a new monster this week or something. And then you can have a lot of fun making them. It's something that I can also easily post to the Discord server and be like, what do you think of this design? Does it need something? Does it have too much? What kind of skills can it have? And people can contribute. It's a very interactive kind of task, adding a new monster. And so for those reasons, I'd say it was the most fun and probably the least challenging part of the development process.
I think we can see that because over the development, we can see the mechanics of the monsters grow a little, almost yeah. being like the same amount of effort you put it just like the Path Quest itself.
Yeah, I've been really trying to, over the months, over the past year, really trying to make each of the monsters feel unique and make it give people a reason to prefer one monster over another monster. I think that's key. If you want to have any kind of game where people collect and use different kinds of monsters or different kinds of anything, there's got to be playstyle reasons why somebody might prefer one and another person might prefer another. So I've really been trying, you know, coming up with passive abilities for them, also tweaking their active abilities to make them more diverse, more useful. Also, when you're fighting against them, they can sometimes use skills that are AI only, so they can be a little bit more creative. They don't have to depend on, you know, keyboard input and things, you know, like a monster could teleport from one side of the room to the other and stuff like that. So I've really been trying to bring out the character in all the monsters.
I already have a favorite, is the octopus one.
Yeah, Moctopus.
Moctopus. He's so cute. And I found interest the ones of the Jurassic Park themed ones.
Yeah, the dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Moving on to the last topic. The launch itself. You already talked about how indie development is different because you are all by yourself and you have to do a lot more than any kind of person individually were supposed to do. But how was the setting of the 7th of May to be the official launch of the Path Quest?
Well, so there's a few different considerations. One is that I did not want to launch the game during a Steam sale. That's just a really bad idea because everyone's going to be seeing the sale games instead of seeing your game. And there is a Steam sale in June every year, the summer sale. So I definitely did not want to launch it in June. However, launching it in April was just too soon. I mean, it's 7th of April now and I still have to you know, get it out to reviewers, and I have to make sure the Steam page has up-to-date screenshots, and I have to do a dozen other things. So May was kind of the natural choice because of those two factors. So I was going to target May 14 because it was halfway through May. But then I found out that Subnautica Below Zero releases on consoles on May 14. So I thought maybe it's best to try May 7 instead, just so that I have more of an open field or less direct competition on the day of launch.
These are the two questions. You kind of answered that in the Q&A section of Discord, but launching the game for the other platforms like Switch and mobile.
Oh, right. Yeah. Console ports. Mobile is not something that the game is well suited for, so there will never be a mobile port. But consoles are something that I really do want to do, in particular for Switch. I think it would be a really good fit for Switch, but also maybe for Xbox and PlayStation. However, because my time is already split up between so many different tasks, it's not something that I'm going to do until the game reaches 1.0 and is, you know, pretty much complete. Because at the moment, it's going to launch as an early access, and I'm going to continue adding levels and adding monsters and things for some time. So once that's all done, then I really want to look into some console ports.
In the same kind of way, localization to other idioms.
Yes. Again, that's something that I really would like to do. It makes a lot of sense to do that. However, with me changing the game so rapidly still, and adding new features and things that all inevitably require some text, it is difficult to do that while at the same time getting localizations for all of that new text that I add in every update. So it's something that's going to have to wait until the game is pretty much complete, and then I will be able to sort of extract out all the text from the game and put it in an external file, which then people can replace with community translations and things. That's basically how it will work. And that is something I want to do, have, you know, translations for all the popular European languages, including Portuguese, and also whichever other languages I can find people to contribute to. But it is also something that I don't have time to work on immediately.
I will be very looking forward to be a part of the localization for Portuguese.
Thank you.
As I in the game, do you seek for publishers? Is some kind of talk already going on about that? Just so you have more resources to do what you kind of hoping to do in the future?
Yeah, it is something that I have thought about on and off. In the end, I've decided not to go with a publisher, at least for now. I kind of was thinking, since I have the YouTube channel and the Discord server, I already have a little bit of momentum going into this launch. And also, since it is an early access launch, it's not the final launch, it's not like I need to get 100% of my sales now. I can sort of, you know, build them up over time, releasing new videos and things. So it seemed like I was in a position where maybe I don't need a publisher as much as some other developers might do if they don't have any kind of online presence already. You know, I might look into it once we get to a version 1.0 launch and I can see how the game is doing, you know, how it's progressing, whether it needs that extra boost from a publisher, but it's still all up in the air right now, honestly. But if you are a publisher listening to this and you have offers, you can contact me on Discord.
Not for missing the opportunity, no? The game will be launching 7th of May. Do you already have a price for it?
Yes. Well, so the game, the way Steam works is that they offer different prices for different currencies around the world. So you choose a dollar price, and then based on that dollar price, Steam recommends a whole bunch of prices in a whole bunch of different currencies. So I'm going to be selling it for $20. However, okay. Steam recommends 40 reals for the game. I don't know how many dollars that is, but it's probably less than $20.
It's almost 10.
Cool. So $10 for you and your listeners.
Woohoo! I really think it's a good value.
Thank you.
The last question is, you are planning to patch Quest 2?
Well, maybe. I mean, I'm planning to continue adding content to Patch Quest. until I kind of run out of things to add, or until people lose interest. One of the two. But I would like to make another game afterwards, but maybe not another patch quest game, maybe a different genre. We'll have to see.
Let's hope for the latter, to be to be out of ideas to edit.
Yeah.
Lemon, thank you so much for joining us in this conversation. Again, sorry for my broken English.
It's no, that's quite okay. I think you've been speaking very good English for someone who doesn't normally speak it. Certainly, if we did this interview in Portuguese, it would not have gotten very far.
I can be your Portuguese teacher if you want it.
I'll be in touch.
Where can we find more about Pets Quest, and where can we talk to you if you want to?
So the two main places to get Patch Quest news are the Patch Quest YouTube channel, which I try to post to every month, and also the Patch Quest Discord server. It's a public server, so you don't need an invite. You can just Google Patch Quest Discord server and you can get in. And in there, you can talk to me. And I also post every day. So if you really want the news, that's the place to be. And of course, you can wishlist Patch Quest on Steam already, even though it's not launched. Getting those wishlists will help the game a lot. So anyone who does that, I thank you.
Thank you so much. And my review will be launching 14th, I guess.
Cool.
Say bye to our listenership.
Goodbye, listenership.
Yeah.